Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Hello?
We're on to Cincinnati.
You play to win the game.
It was all that Dan Marino's fault. Everyone knows that.
When it's too tough for them, it's just right for us.
Rockpile Report AFC East Roundup, hosted by Bills season ticket holder Drew Gear, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network.
From 50 yards out of the hold of Morstead, on the way, down the middle, with distance, Dolphins take the lead with 18 seconds. No D lineman in the game. 11 players out there to defend whatever the Jets draw up. They quickly get it to Garrett Wilson, and now they'll look to get tricky. Back to Joe Flacco. Now Elijah Moore. Dolphins need one tackle to get to the playoffs. It's loose, and that'll do the trick. The drought is over. Losing streak is over, and the drought is over.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the AFC's Roundup Podcast. I'm your host, Bill, season ticket holder Drew Gear. That's my producer, Chris Krueger. And
that was Tom McCarthy from Fox. You forgot that you sent me a highlight.
Yes, I did.
That's how boring that Jet-Dolphin game was. It's all field goals.
Literally just a field goal festival. It was the only, Chris, the only truly impactful game of the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, if the Patriots had won their game against the Bills, yes, they could have punched their own ticket. But did anyone actually think that the Patriots are going to win that game?
No.
Okay.
I did pick the Jets to beat the Dolphins.
Well, and it almost happened.
I know. Well, I don't trust the Dolphins with a backup quarterback.
The final week of the NFL season is in the books, and with that, it means that our AFC East Roundup podcasts are nearly at an end. Is it crazy to think that we just podcasted for 18 weeks? Like, 18 weeks is a long time.
This is the hardest time of year for us to be podcasting because it's the season. It's what the main focus of the podcast is between those 18 weeks. Granted, we do cover off-season stuff, but it's, you know, none of it is...
Chris, we're not draft savants.
No, but
although,
like,
we do know a lot of people, that's been the success of our draft series, is that we're smart enough to know we're dumb, and we bring in other people. Our free agency previews, again, we're smart enough to know. Listen, I nail a couple now and again. You hate it.
Yeah, I do.
But by and large, we're smart enough to know what we don't know. And so we collaborate in making content with other smart people who have a better lay of the land, can read the tea leaves a little bit better, have some better thoughts and ideas.
And it's more laid back than the regular season. We get to, like, once February hits, the Super Bowl's over, it calms down around here.
But you'd think that we'd drink more then, and we don't. In fact,
no.
We drink far less during the off season.
No.
I mean, almost like you and I are stress drinkers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I switch back to drinking cocktails on the show. So
yeah. I see that.
Which, by the way, you're going to need to toss me a beer.
Yes!
Out of the fridge. I have been slacking over the last couple weeks because you did a show. We did remote. My stomach wasn't feeling good a couple weeks ago.
I come over and Chris goes, I texted Chris and I go, Chris, for the pizza tonight, where should I order from? He goes, I'm afraid that if I put anything in, it'll come right back out. I go, well, have you thrown up? He goes, no, I just know my body.
Yeah, you just
I like you.
You just know, like, oh, if I eat that, it's...
See, I'll just eat it. I'll be like, well, we'll just eat it and
you
see how it goes.
Eat it and then suffer the consequences?
Exactly. No. It's weird to think that we've made it 18 weeks. And, like, how much of that time was spent here by both us and our listeners? Just here. Talking about a season. How much of that time did we believe that we were the most competitive division in the NFL?
Up until, like, week 11.
And then this week kind of came along and showed everybody its ass, right?
Yeah.
It really did not go well. What? In fact, down the stretch, what? We had back-to-back weeks where the Bills were the only team that won.
Yep.
And then this week, two teams won only because one of them had to. And it literally came down to the wire. And so we start things off with the New York Jets, who lost to the Dolphins 11-6. Scott, I have to ask the question. There have been a lot of poor ends to Jets seasons. Just how bitter of a taste did this one leave in your mouth?
I'll be honest, Drew. I didn't care. Like, who at that point, who cares? The game didn't mean anything. And I guess, yeah, you want to knock the Dolphins out of the playoffs. But you're sitting there, you're watching Joe Flacco. And I'm just thinking to myself, I have to have done something wrong in a previous life to deserve having to sit here and watch this on a otherwise perfectly good December Sunday when I could have been doing any number of hundreds of things. So I honestly, it wasn't that they lost. It was just how lifeless everybody looked. And the defense was bend but don't break again. Skylar Thompson stinks. They let the Dolphins move up and down the field with the run game a little too much. But in the end, you know, you give up 11 points and, well, really 9 because the 2 points came off the safety. And you should win those games. But I think what this really did was it pounded home once and for all that a lot of changes needed to be made. We already saw the first domino fall, actually only minutes before we started recording right now, as Mike LaFleur has officially been fired. There was that report earlier today by Aaron Wilson that Mike LaFleur was fired, and then a bunch of the Jet beat reporters came out and said it wasn't true, he wasn't fired. And I'm not trying to throw shade on my friends on the Jets beat because I'm friendly with a fair amount of them and I like them and I think they're good at what they do. But at the same time, Aaron Wilson was not going to be reporting that unless he had real information. He's a good reporter. He doesn't miss on stuff like that. So LaFleur's out. The offense was bad. I'm not saying it was all his fault, but there are a variety of things in play there. And we can get into it if you want, of course. And I think just watching that offense one last time really showed you that the offensive line needs a rebuild, but more importantly, they've got to get better quarterback play. And they can have the best offensive coordinator in the world, but if they run it back with the same quarterback room next year, there's no reason for anybody to be super optimistic about it. Now, they do need to upgrade an offensive coordinator, obviously.
Well let's talk about that for a second, because there's a lot of Bills fans listening to this who don't understand. They're like, well, we've seen a lot of field goal festivals. It doesn't mean that you got to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I want to throw some statistics out there. First of all, Zonovan Knight, great story for a week or so. UDFA running back, showed some explosion in the preseason, came in, was a fantasy darling out of the gate, set the world on fire, gets held to 1.8 yards per carry and less than 25 total yards on the day. Garrett Wilson, who we all know, like, Chris, in the draft, Garrett Wilson, blue chip prospect. Everyone looked and said he's probably the most surefire of these wide receivers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Garrett Wilson goes to the Jets, and he looks the part. Like, as the season's going on, you go, this is a guy who I could see developing into a team's de facto number one receiver. And he's got a lot of upside. He's got a lot of big playability, contested catchability. He does all these things. He gets targeted in this game 17 times. which is ridiculous. I mean, that's literally, if you go back to the Bills game against the Patriots, it's almost as many times as Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs combined. And yet, he couldn't crack 100 yards or find the end zone. Like, that, you're doing something wrong.
To be fair, he actually had 102 yards, and then on the last play, he lost 13, which dragged him back to 89. But that was another bad play call by LaFleur, so it kind of goes to the overall point.
Well, exactly. And this is my point. Like, you have a talent like this. He's working his ass off, and he's getting a ludicrous number of opportunities. And he can't get to 100 or a touchdown? Then it's not him. Like, at this point, it's not the player. You have to look around and go, who the fuck is throwing him the ball? And who's designing these plays, point blank and period? So now my question is, with LaFleur firing in the aftermath of what is just one of the worst offensive performances the Jets have had all season, I don't care so much about the firing as I do the philosophy. And I kind of alluded to this in a tweet that I'm sure Greg Thompson's going to be listening to on your podcast now, because we kind of used his point to piggyback off of it. But what does it say about the Jets' philosophy moving forward? Because Mike LaFleur was brought in here to be part of this brain trust that was going to grow a young quarterback. We're going to build a running game. We're going to have young quarterbacks, and we're going to foster their growth. To see him thrown out the window almost makes you think that they might be shifting philosophies on what they need at the quarterback position, correct?
There's so much that goes into all of this with the quarterback position. And you had mentioned this on Twitter, Drew, that this might indicate that the Jets are looking for a proven veteran. I think no matter what, that's the way that they were going to go here.
Because the rebuild is ahead of schedule.
Right. Well, but the thing with Mike LaFleur, and I have to circle back to this a little bit. Woody Johnson is a guy who's always valued player feedback when it comes to coaches. In fact, it's what got Eric Mangini fired in 2008 after the team collapsed and missed the playoffs with Brett Favre. Woody Johnson felt like Mangini wasn't keeping him in the loop. And then when he surveyed the players, he heard way too many negative comments and decided to move on. You heard what Elijah Moore had to say earlier in the year when he demanded a trade. Garrett Wilson, in his closing remarks at the Monday presser when people were cleaning out their locker rooms, said it just seemed like the other teams had figured them out and knew what they were doing ahead of time. And you saw the clip of Tariq Woolen on the sideline basically saying, okay, so here's what the Jets are doing. When I see this, I know they're going to do that. There was not a lot of growth there. And we can sit here and talk about how bad the quarterbacks were. And look, he was dealt a bad hand in because, remember, he was handed Zach Wilson, the number two overall pick, and said, all right, you're in charge of, and especially now this year, when they didn't bring back a more experienced quarterback guru, so to speak, like a Matt Kavanaugh or John Beck, who were around last year, it was just Rob Calabrese, so I assume is the next to go, and Mike LaFleur. And what Salas said is he wanted to quiet the quarterback room. Okay, great. Now you've put Mike LaFleur in charge of his development squarely, and he got worse this year. He got significantly worse to the point where he wasn't playable at the end of the year, and he was getting booed off the field in his home stadium. And so when you go back,
I'm not gonna lie, I watched that Jaguars game, Scott. I'm not a Jets fan. If I was at that game, just for the sake of watching a decent football game, I would have been booing. I might have thrown something on the field. I might have thrown myself on the field during that Thursday night football game against the Jaguars. If it meant that I didn't have to see any more Zach Wilson.
But ultimately what it comes down to is you look at it and you say, okay, Wilson greatly regressed. I mean, not that he was killing it last year either, but toward the end of the year, he was at least looked like he was picking up a little bit of steam. That all went away and it got worse this year, right? You read the statistics, and if you go through, you can go through all the stats of how bad the Jet offense was overall this year. And then you can make the excuses about the injuries and the quarterback play and all that. But again, Garrett Wilson, you heard comments from him. You heard what Elijah Moore had to say. By all accounts, Zach Wilson and Mike LaFleur are not exactly best pals right now either. So you put all those things together, and then you also have the fact that the Jets are going to be looking to go out and get an established quarterback now, whether that's Derek Carr or Jimmy G or somebody like that. And you want somebody that you believe that you can trust not only with that guy, but also to develop, either redevelop Zach Wilson or bring in another young guy to develop. And so when you put all of those things together, I think it just became a picture where they looked at it and said, okay, we could ride this out, but I think it's in the best interest of everybody to move on. And we'll see. Maybe Mike LaFleur goes back to San Fran. Maybe he goes and joins his brother, Steph, and with the Packers. I don't know what's going to happen now.
Maybe he goes and just sits down at the beach. You know what? In fact, maybe he goes full Jersey Shore. He likes what he saw over there. He literally just embraces the culture, gets a nice headband, gels his hair like Chris.
Let's hope he doesn't do that. I don't want to see Mike LaFleur getting arrested with Ronnie in the situation on the Jersey Shore. But no, they're going to have to do something at quarterback. And I actually, you know, there were a couple of ideas that I had. Look, my dream guy for the job is Todd Monken. I wanted the Jets to hire him in 2019 as the head coach. He was the runner up to Gase, of course. Then you know what happened there. He went to the Browns, where he was basically a potted plant for Freddie Kitchens. And then they ran him out. And
is it bad that you just said Freddie Kitchens? And until you said his name, I forgot that he ever held an NFL like head coaching job.
Yeah, well, I bet Browns fans wish they could forget that too. But so Monken then goes to Georgia, and look what he did there. I mean, back-to-back national championships. Stetson Bennett was a Heisman Trophy candidate. I mean, he makes Bryce Young look like Andre the Giant. And Todd Monken had him. You guys would appreciate this. This is part of why I love Todd Monken too. I was just listening to an interview that he did just before the college football playoffs started, and he was asked about Stetson Bennett, and he said Stetson Bennett was a guy who was a walk-on, and he left to go be able to play somewhere at some junior college or something. And when Fields transferred from Georgia to Ohio State, Stetson Bennett came back, and he goes, look, I'll be honest, I did everything I could to bury the little bastard. He's like, I made it clear to him that he wasn't good enough. I told him I had no intention of playing him. I did everything to crush his spirit and crush his will and make him believe that he wasn't ever going to get a chance and he wasn't good enough. And you know what his response was? His response was to basically give me the middle finger and say, I'll show you what I can do. And then he went out and did it. And so I love Monken's on it. Like, I think that would play really well here in New York. But he's obviously the resume. You go back and look at what he did in Tampa with Southern Miss and Nick Mullins and how he turned him into an NFL quarterback. Brandon Whedon, he got a 28-year-old guy to be a first-round pick when he was at Oklahoma State. But being more realistic, I think you've heard the name Gary Kubiak. I don't love that so much. He's been out of football for 3 years. He's 62. I'd rather go in a different direction.
Gary Kubiak, you can't resurrect that skeleton and throw him in here and expect anyone to get excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, if it happens, it happens. Frank Reich's another name you keep hearing. He has connections to Douglas, but he doesn't have any connections to Saleh. And the other thing about Frank Reich is I still don't know for sure if he's actually good. Remember, when he was in Philly, Peterson was calling the plays, and then look at what happened with the Colts. He begged them to get Wentz, and Wentz was terrible when he got there. And then we saw he just completely floundered after Andrew Luck in the 1 year of Philip Rivers. So look, whatever, if they get right, that's okay. The guy that I think would make a lot of sense, and actually Marcus Johnson from Tape Don't Lie, he's a guy that does a lot of Raiders film, and I'm actually having him on. We're going to do a whole deep dive on Derek Carr. He brought up the name Greg Olsen, and it really makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Greg Olsen, not the player, obviously, has been a longtime coach. He overlapped with Saleh in Jacksonville, so they know each other, so there's a bit of a familiarity there. But the thing with Olsen that's interesting, too, is like you look at Derek Carr. He played his best football with Greg Olsen. The 3 years that Olsen was there under Bisaccia and before that Gruden, Derek Carr was playing his best football. So Olsen clearly realized the best way to utilize him. Now, people will say, well, what if you hire Olsen and you don't get Carr? That's fine, because you go back and look at what Olsen did in Jacksonville with Blake Bortles, when Blake Bortles threw 35 touchdown passes and 4,400 yards, which doesn't seem like could be possible with somebody like Blake Bortles, right? And you look at what he did with the Rams and Jared Goff when he was there under McVay the first time, because he's there now again. And Goff really took a big step forward with Greg Olsen there. So I think that'd be an interesting one. You bring in Olsen and then maybe use that as a recruiting tool to try and pitch to Derek Carr. If not, you can have him to, and this is the thing too. He's had, like I said, he has a track record with younger quarterbacks. So if you want to revive Zach Wilson, he could be a guy that could do it. If you want to draft somebody else, I floated the idea of maybe not drafting a first round QB, but if you've decided to move on from Zach Wilson, maybe somebody like Hendon Hooker from Tennessee, who you might be able to get in the second or third round. You build him behind whatever veteran you get. But the point is, the offense is going to go in a very different direction, Drew, and they're going to have to make a major move at quarterback, and it's got to be a big swing.
How frustrating is it knowing that's the thing that kept you guys from being here talking about this, talking about your season for another week or two? Like, just the mistakes made at quarterback and some of the mistakes made at offensive coordinator. In fact, not even that he's a mistake, but that just his decision-making down the stretch and just how he chose to approach a lot of this. That's the difference between you guys being in the Dolphins' position right now and being here talking about what comes next. How frustrating is that as a longtime season ticket holder, longtime fan, longtime podcaster?
I think it's weird because even with as bad as the quarterbacks are playing, I talked about this the other day. I think truly the day that the Jets season ended, in retrospect now, was October 23rd in Denver when Breece Hall and Elijah Vera Tucker got hurt. Because I still believe that if Breece Hall and Elijah Vera Tucker hadn't gotten hurt, they would have had enough to continue to hide Zach Wilson in those two Patriots games, one of which the Patriots scored 3 points until that last punt return at the end. The other one, Zach Wilson threw 3 interceptions and blew the game. If he has Breece Hall, he's handing the ball off a lot more and not having to rely on trying to make plays with his arm like that. So I think in the short run, having those two guys, they probably still could have made the playoffs even with the bad quarterback play. Now, going forward, Wilson showed you, and maybe in a way, in the long run, it was a blessing. Wilson showed you that he's not ready to be out there. Is he ever going to be that guy? The odds aren't great, but maybe it's still possible. It's not unprecedented. But what those guys getting hurt showed you is that the Jets aren't where they need to be at quarterback, whether that's Wilson or whether it's somebody else. So I think it's frustrating that the quarterback play really held them back. But I also think that in some ways, if he wasn't going to be good, it's better that the Band-Aid just got completely ripped off now instead of like slowly picking at it until the Band-Aid is finally off. And now we know that Wilson, if he's going to be good, he has to really work and try to turn this around. And if not, they have to go in another direction. Breece Hall and Elijah Vera Tucker might have masked that enough where the Jets get in the playoffs, and now you're lying to yourself about where Zach Wilson is at in his development. So it's kind of a little bit of a bunch of different things.
It's a blessing in disguise in some ways.
That the quarterback position went as south as it did.
Well, you guys have a full offseason slate of content that starts this week. We have one more week in the AFC's roundup where we'll get together and kind of recap the season as it plays out for the division next week. Until then, and obviously on through the summer, where you guys are going to be, again, one of the league's most interesting teams for reasons not exactly ideal. Where can people find all your content at Play Like a Jet?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff. We are going to be like Mick Foley, the hardcore champion, over the next couple of weeks and months, because we're going to hang in there 7 days a week, and I'm just going to be taking metaphorical chair shot after chair shot to the head as I do these shows. You can find the show on anywhere that you can download podcasts: Apple, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, the whole deal. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. We've got PlayLikeAJet.com with some great written content. We've got our store, tpublic.com. We've got our YouTube channel, youtube.com/PlayLikeAJet. And on the show, and this will be interesting, I don't know if Derek Carr winds up a Jet, but he also could end up a Patriot, theoretically, if the Patriots pull the plug on Mac Jones. So if you're a Bills fan, you might want to learn about Derek Carr. Marcus Johnson from Tape Don't Lie will be on the show. It's going to be a two-parter, Monday and Tuesday, and we're going to go through every nook and cranny. How bad was Carr really as bad as people said this year? How much of what happened was his fault? Is he, quote-unquote, not a winner? Would he be a good fit in specific systems? What are his strengths and weaknesses? Is he somebody that was a victim of a bad match with the wrong coach? We're going to answer all those questions, so if you want to hear that and a whole bunch more, remember, you can get it pretty much anywhere. Monday and Tuesday, we'll have those shows. And then we're going to do 7 days a week, even all throughout the off season. Drew, your season continues. my season continues. The Jets season, unfortunately, does not continue, but mine does. And while I'm not sure that I would necessarily be behind the Bills winning a Super Bowl because I'll never hear the end of it from you guys, I definitely do want to see them beat the crap out of the Dolphins this week. So we'll start there.
Oh, my God. We're here talking about the New England Patriots who lost to the Bills 35-23 with Christian Simonelli. And I just love the fact that I just was about to ask how it's going, and I didn't even specify what was your answer there, Christian?
Fucking sucks.
He goes, I don't even know what you're about to ask. It doesn't matter. It all fucking sucks. The 2022 season comes to a close. With it, the Patriots have missed the playoffs for just the second time in the last 14 years. It's like, first of all, that's a lot. Like, that's a huge thing to take in. Like, you twice in 14 years? And yet, you're frustrated.
Yeah, because I don't see the team improving that much to be competitive with the top teams in the league in the next... It's going to take a couple of years. So, I'm just miserable. Well, I also noticed that I'm the only guest that you always crack a fresh Montucky with, which just leads me to believe how much you enjoy this segment.
It's like when you see someone pour a glass of wine to go with the cheese they're about to eat.
Oh, yeah.
I will say I do enjoy our conversations here on the show. And a lot more now than I used to enjoy talking about the Patriots. But so is that where a lot of the fan angst is coming from? It's not so much because as an outsider, it's hard, isn't it, Chris? Like, you look at a team that has literally set the standard. Like, they are the definition of NFL dynasty. No franchise has ever done it or ever will do it again. What, 7 rings? Did you guys get to 7?
6.
6. Okay. 6 rings with a Hall of Fame coach, Hall of Fame quarterback. Unheard of. No, I like... The whole franchise of the Pittsburgh Steelers has 6 rings. And you guys had it in a 20-year window with 2 guys. That's ridiculous. And so as an outsider, it's hard for a lot of us to have and find sympathy for Patriots fans who are upset now. Because we look at it and we go, you guys have had all of these successes. For you, it's not about the loss. It's about the trajectory. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I think I've said it before in this podcast that, you know, for the past decade, it was where are we playing the AFC Championship game? Is it going to be home or away? 13, 14 win seasons, roll out of bed. That's what we've come to expect. So, you know, if you want to say, oh, you're a real spoiled, you know, pencil child, I agree with you. Because that was it. You know, it just became to be the norm. And now, you know, you're getting taken out of prime time Sunday night games. You're losing on a last play of a game. You go into what was already going to be a hostile environment. Let's just kick it short, you know, all like to like 2 yards in the end zone, and let's just have Hines, you know, return it, and let's just have the house come down. You know, that the house wasn't coming down anyways. And then you know what? We'll kick it to him again, and he can do it again.
All right, here's something I want to know. We're talking about this game that just happened on Sunday. Obviously, a lot was made about the Bills' opening kick return for a touchdown. Electric play. Chris, it's something that our fan base is going to be talking about for decades. As a non-Bills fan, not just a non-Bills fan or like just an objective outsider, but as someone on the opposite side of that, what was it like watching that play just kind of play out?
All kidding aside, I was watching it. My wife is sitting next to me, and my wife goes, "Oh my god!" And she just looked at me. She goes, "Wow!" She's like, "You kind of got like a smile. Like, why are you smiling?" I'm like, "Honestly," I said, "as a sports fan, how can you not like that? Like, that is one of the coolest plays I've ever seen. Like, you just couldn't get a better moment. Like that. If you want to describe sports to somebody." Tell them the situation going into the game. If somebody knows anything about sports at all, knew nothing about what happened the week, that play, how could you not appreciate that? I mean, it was just an awesome sports moment. It really was.
No, it was, and I'll tell you what, being there for it was.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, there was people crying. There was people hugging. Oh, it was catharsis just in a moment. Like, it was like someone snapped their fingers and they were like, all right, we're doing this thing still. we still got some juice. Let's do this fucking thing. There's a lot of football to be played. And it really did just bring everybody back. Now,
wasn't your head coach in tears?
Oh my God. They showed, like, I didn't know that until I rewatched the game, but you look at him and he's trying to fight through tears. And he's just like, he's holding up the one to his guys, like, hey guys, we're kicking a field goal. We're kicking it, so get out there. And he's got tears in his eyes. Like, I have to. Yeah. He's clapping because he's like, I got to maintain because I need my guys to maintain. We can't get wrapped up in this. You know, it's funny. Right. I made a corollary. Well, it's funny. There was a moment early in my life. We go bowling. And bowling is a team sport. You play multiple games. You don't just bowl a single game of bowling. You bowl three games. And then that makes up the total match. And then whoever wins the most games gets the points. So we show up at this bowling alley, and my buddy bowls his first 300 ever. First ever. And it happens to be this dump of a bowling alley that is offering dollar. There's a sign that says, ask us about our dollar shots. So we go to the bar because now everyone's celebrating because everyone's pumped. They just got to watch a 300. And my buddy asked him about the dollar shots, and it's slow gin, something called Tia Maria, and like some obscure brand like flavored whiskey product. They won't even call it whiskey. It's like a whiskey product. It's almost like government cheese of booze. And they're selling it for $1 a shot. He proceeds to buy $76 worth of these things. Our whole team gets annihilated. We lose the other two games and end up losing the match. So it was cool for him that he bowled his first 300, but it didn't win us the game. In fact, if anything, it actually, we let the emotion get to us and it just, we crumbled. I like the fact that Sean McDermott had to fight his own emotions to try to keep this team on the rails. And he's like, look, one play at a time. It's a game. Like, I love that fucking guy. And I love moments like that. I also like the fact that you guys didn't just go to sleep because that's it. You could have. The Patriots showed a little bit of fight in this one. And that has to make you guys feel good, doesn't it?
I did. It did. Particularly since the last time when they played you at home, I felt that they had given up. I think I texted Chris, you know, the blind man could see it, that they quit, and they quit then. They certainly didn't quit on Sunday. Although, again, I'll bring my wife into this. You know, she said, well, at least they tried. And I said, yeah. I said, well, you know the line from Christmas Vacation when Art, the father-in-law, comments when the granddaughter says, he tried really hard, Grandpa, and Art turns and says, so do washing machines. You know, when he tried to, try to light the house. That's what it was. I go, so did the washing machines. Big deal. They tried. They still lost.
Oh, my God. I'll say this. Mac Jones, as long as they introduce play action to the, like this is, I feel like they waited until the very final game of the season to finally show, like, hey, we might have a play or two that works. You saw Mac Jones look like a useful quarterback. He was going blow for blow with Josh Allen for the whole game, which is kind of proof of concept that if you can give them a, like, their play action passing really worked. We talked about that in our recap show. They found it was like a rock, paper, scissors game, and they called right more than they called wrong. And it was just a good, it was one of the first good play calling games from the Patriots you've seen in a long time. And it was kind of proof of concept that you can win with Mac Jones as a quarterback. Do you think that there's a lot of people in the Patriots fan base who have been critical, like the people who were chanting for Zappy earlier in the year, maybe have a little bit different view of Mac now in the aftermath of a game like this?
Yeah. And you know, I think this was probably his best game since the Minnesota game. And by best game, I mean moving the ball up and down the field, putting points up, you know. And quite frankly, to my delight, didn't see a lot of screens this game.
That's it.
Or play action. They were trying to screen people to death. So I think, quite honestly, it just highlighted the dysfunction of the offensive staff the whole year.
You have the players. They have the ability. You have guys that can win matchups. You have a guy that can deliver that ball to the guys who do win the matchups.
Devontae Parker just had a fucking game.
Yeah.
He comes back and he has a fucking game against a pretty good defense.
Yep, sure did.
What do you think about those guys' future? Because Devontae Parker, I don't know, Jacoby Myers, he seems like it's one of those situations where if he were to go to another team, right, I don't ever see him being a Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, Justin Jefferson, you know, even like new guys like Garrett Wilson. Like, he doesn't have wide receiver one written all over him. But I could picture him being a great Roddy White to a Julio Jones somewhere in the NFL. I guess the question is, do you see it as like, hey, the Patriots thinking to themselves, we have to keep this guy?
I think they do, and I kind of my comparison to him was like Teddy Bruschi. I think if Teddy Bruschi went and played for anybody else, he wouldn't have been Teddy Bruschi. But the fact that Teddy Bruschi stayed here his career, he was like the ultimate Patriot. And I kind of see Jacoby Myers that way. You brought him in undrafted, cultivated him. You developed this guy. The question is he going to leave for more money because the wide receiver market isn't that strong this year in free agency? So is he going to get an offer that's simply too good to refuse, and the Patriots going to be willing to keep him? I'm willing to keep him and to pay him, but he's definitely out of slot. Like you said, he's definitely more of a three, not one or two. If you bring in another guy, and there's been a clip going around that Bill is like, you know, basically gave DeAndre Hopkins a tongue bath when they played Arizona. You know, you're great. You know, you're going to lead the league in receiving despite missing half the year. I love you. It's like, this is how I do it, Coach. I love you, Coach. You know, like, there's been that. So people are already like fantasizing about that. But I love Myers. I hope they keep him. I hope they keep Jonathan Jones on defense as well, and they get a top flight corner. Devontae Parker, I like. I think the guy that they drafted in N'Keal Harry is what Parker can be. That big guy who can go down the field and get jump balls. So I like both of them. I'd like to see them in a competent system and see what they can do. But, I mean, we definitely need to get faster at that position. I'll say that. And those guys aren't exactly lighting the world on fire when it comes to the speed department.
So the Patriots season's over. You've missed the playoffs for just the second time in 14 years. Where do your rooting interests lie when it comes to this weekend's games?
Well, look, I mean, you guys obviously have a cakewalk. You're playing, against the team in Miami that doesn't have a starting quarterback, and like half the guys are on the injury report. So, you know, you guys should get your bye week this week, which is nice at home. I'm rooting for you guys. I don't necessarily mind Mahomes, but I'd love to see you guys take it over the top. I really would. And obviously for my boy, I mean, look for me, the dream scenario, you know what the dream scenario is for me. You know what the dream scenario is for me. The Buffalo Bills versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be great. I just want to see your head explode. Oh, it'd be phenomenal to see your head explode after you win the championship game and then you say, oh, my God, we have to go play Brady.
Oh, my God. Chris, can you imagine, though, this year's Tampa Bay Buccaneers? The Bills playing them in the Super Bowl. Josh Allen's never beaten Tom Brady. Just all the dragons he's slayed, all the like this game, this year. It's funny you say that because this year we've talked about the narrative being the revenge tour year and just how many wrongs we've righted in this season. That would be the ultimate moment, crushing Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, doing to him what you guys did to Patrick Mahomes in that Super Bowl and just dog walking him right out the door and having like. It would be, I'm a petty man. It would be like if I just ate a whole pound of Wagyu. Like, I would have to lay back and digest that game for a whole week. I wouldn't go to work. I wouldn't leave the house. I would just be rewatching the game and drinking. Christian, it's been a great season. We're not done yet. We have one more show where we're going to put a bow on the whole thing. Where can people follow you on social? Where can they kind of, again, interact with you and help enjoy what is the Patriots fan experience?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Chris with a T-I-A-N. And, you can follow me for all your sarcastic Patriots takes. I, I did call for Bill Belichick's job earlier in the week, and that led to some vitriol and hate tweets and hate mail, and people hate sliding into my DMs. So, but I welcome everybody. It's all in fun.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I love this shit. Guys, we just literally came back from break talking with Joey here, or Vero Delfino.
Formerly known as Vero.
Talking about the Dolphins, who beat the Jets 11-6 and qualified for the NFL postseason. Now, Joey or Vero, depending on...
whatever the fuck my name is.
Depending on who you feel like calling yourself on Twitter today. First of all, I love the fact that we did a show with you back in like 2016. Back when...
I was about to say, it's got to be fucking 7 years ago.
Back when you and I were both taking this shit seriously. You came on our show and you minded your P's and Q's.
Let's stop the presses right here.
You minded your P's and Q's.
I have never taken no shit seriously, so I don't know. I'm not sure where that's coming from. No, it's when we were both... I had just started Inches. Yous had just started Rockpile. But my channel had been going before that. Before Inches, it was fucking... Finn's Look, Orange and Aqua.
Yes. The
Finn's Broadcast. You guys remember Ron?
Yes.
Yeah, Ron. Saying.
There was a whole pre-Inches history.
Ron Inches. Blocked us.
Yeah, you know Ron blocked us on Twitter?
Ron does some a lot of funny shit on Twitter.
So,
I love him anyway.
Well, the funny thing is, though, I was like, someone sent him a screenshot of this because it's gonna drive him nuts. And I sent a tweet and I was just like, yeah, I think Miko Grimes is right about this guy. And I was like, I know that'll chap his ass. He'll see it, and then one day he'll forget, and he'll unblock us, and I'll be like, dude, come on. Let's have a beer. So here's what I love about you. You came on, you did our show. We all ran it by the numbers because we were all really trying here.
You let 7 years go by before you invited me back. Hey, no big deal. We'll talk about that some other time.
Well, no, what we'll talk about is you developed, you figured out what this thing was before we did, which is just, hey, we drink and we fuck around. That's what this is. Except
I thought you were like trying. I thought you try to do a serious show and talk about football and shit. You know, I don't even talk about the Dolphins on my program.
Oh, I know. I listen to your program. That's why I know. That's why I love you, Joey.
It's not a show. It's not a show about the Dolphins. It's a show about people fucking around who happen to be Dolphins fans.
Exactly. And that's what I love about it, is because you're not X's and O's. You're not sitting here trying to be Walter Cronkite. You do what you do, and it makes me laugh. You on Twitter make me, like, you just found out off air that I actually follow you on Twitter. Why? Because you make me laugh on a daily basis. Something
I mean, are you trying to date me or something? What the fuck is going on here?
So this is what I'll say. First of all, I knew your name was Joe. First of all, Vero Delfino. It's stupid. Where the fuck did you come up with that, and what is it?
That's not fucking stupid, guy. True Dolphin in Italian. The fuck are you talking about? It's stupid. Look. About the time I invented Vero, I guess, I needed, you know, I was doing real fucking bad. It's that sort of like brick wall you hit in your like early to mid 30s, where if shit hasn't gone exactly according to plan, which, you know, you don't, some people can sort of like try to shrink from that. And so I, you know, just start becoming Vero. And Vero was this sort of, it's me, all right? It's been me the whole fucking time. It's still me, but
you made a character.
In my mind, I was compartmentalizing and like trying not to feel like myself because shit wasn't going too good. But
shit's going
better now. So I don't need that sort of whatever that was.
And I love
it. It was cool. And people are still fucking, they're perfectly welcome to call me Vero. They still will.
Well, I knew your name was Joe.
I'm sort of treating it like my alter ego now. Like, don't make me fucking...
Don't make me go back to it.
Don't make me go get Vero, please.
Well, what I love is that I knew your name was Joey because you did some design work for us once upon a time. And on the invoice that you sent me from your company... Yeah. And on the invoice you sent me, it had your real name. And I was like, that's hilarious. That is hilarious. And also, I knew he was a Guido. I knew it. Jeez, but this just confirmed it.
I was sending people invoices in those days.
Yes,
too?
You Fuck. Invoiced me.
I'm doing this shit all shady now.
Here's what I love. You've also made some really flattering Photoshops and animations of Chris and I that have floated around the internet for years.
No, I don't. Those aren't still going around.
Dude, I have them.
I have them too.
Sometimes I put them out. Sometimes I'll just
I think I might have the GIF I made of you.
I'm sure. So this is what I love. I love how wildly inappropriate you are about things. And I love how excited you got. That's why you're here tonight, is to talk to us about your excitement about the Miami Dolphins. In what was
I'm here
a dog
to ruin your fucking evening.
Well, here's the thing. In what was a dog shit day of football. Like, I'm here watching the Bills play the Patriots. They're kicking the Patriots' ass. The scoreboard's close, but you can tell it's one of those games the Bills are not going to lose. And I'm watching on my phone. I'm following along with your game with the Jets, and I'm going, holy fuck, how is it 6-6? How are these guys not, like, are they really going to dick around and let the Steelers make the playoffs? Like, come on. So I'm watching this happen. First of all, as you're watching that game, where is your blood pressure?
I'm telling you, I turned over a new fucking leaf.
Really?
It's not me anymore. It's a different me now. I'm not like super laid back or nothing, but no. It takes me, you're not as much of a wild man. It takes me. I just realized I can see you still if I go to the right window.
Yeah, exactly.
You're ugly as a motherfucker. You know that.
Tell that to every girl who's ever dated me. Apparently, they haven't gotten the message.
I have never seen a human being look more like Barney the fucking dinosaur.
Dude, what I love is these teeth. I love it. My parents came to me when I was 12, and they're like, you should get braces. We'll pay for them. And I go, braces? I'll look like an ass. Now I'm 37 going, man, I should have got those braces. I look like an ass.
Hey, no, but you know what? Honestly, it looks like you've slimmed up, though.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And you know what? It was funny that you started posting your pictures of yourself, because I was like, I always knew he had facial hair. You have a voice that says, I have facial hair. I love it. So you're watching that football game. Describe your emotions as it's going on.
Well, I mean, surely you realize the last like 6 weeks has been horrid for us. So,
and
I've
as it's been horrid,
inside,
your Twitter account has gotten funnier
for, like,
with every
the
loss.
Last, what's that?
With every loss, your Twitter account got funnier.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been dead inside since like week two of the skid, so it doesn't really fucking matter what I was feeling or if I'm even capable of doing such a thing at this point.
So here
and,
you are,
and you've heard the fucking news. So. Yeah, no.
I understand. But I will say that for someone who claims to be dead inside, Chris, we have the audio, do we?
I do. Here it is.
Oh, here we go, folks.
Oh, did you get the video? Yeah, okay.
For a guy who claims to be dead inside, this is Joey.
What are you doing?
Watching
go fuck yourself. Roll the tape.
I fucking swear. I will never fucking talk shit about you again, Jason!
I'm gonna.
Jason! Jason, 50 yards for the playoffs. Please.
Please.
Yes. No. You motherfucker. No.
Turn this off right now, you fucking cowards.
You fucking did it. You absolute motherfucker. What? I'm going to fucking die.
Phone starts blowing up.
Yep.
That's fucking hilarious.
Now, Chris, first of all, for a guy who's
that was a dirty trick, you fucking underhanded pricks.
Yeah, I know. So
don't put stuff on the internet and we won't take advantage of it. The same way you take advantage of pictures
every photo of
Drew.
My teeth that have ever existed.
Or you shirtless.
True.
I'm sure I've never put anything untoward on the internet.
So, Chris, does that sound like the audio of a man who's dead inside?
No.
Or does that sound like pure elation? Does that sound like...
Listen, as Bills fans, you know exactly where I'm coming from.
Oh, 100%.
You can be dead inside, and then from somewhere in the fucking center of the earth comes an eruption But
well, that's yeah, it.
There's nothing. There's nothing there. My heart is a fucking cold steel ball at its core.
Here's what I love. That moment. That moment struck me, Joey, because when I hear that, I think to myself, I remember when we broke our drought. I cried. It made Chris super uncomfortable because Chris doesn't know how to handle human emotions. Right, Chris?
Correct.
So I cried and Chris literally, and then I cried and tried to Chris, like not kiss him. I tried to hug Chris really tight and he literally was like stiff arming me. He was
going for the rape whistle.
Well, he was like, I didn't know if you were going to try to kiss me. I'm like, of course I'm not going to try to kiss you. It's a hug. You mutant.
Even if he tried, who can't enjoy a little kiss between two friends? Jesus, Chris.
Listen, in a passionate moment like that, things happen. But well, here's
Drew did that earlier this year again in the Packers tailgate with the listener.
It's like, listen, I'll get emotional. I'm an emotional man. I have no, I don't have to hide that. What I love is that you had that moment and I know exactly what that moment's like. And I go, of all the people that I ever thought would be there. Now, I love how you did add, I'll never talk shit about Jason Sanders ever again. And then you were fucking listening to it. And you were like, that's a lie. I will.
Blatant fucking lie.
But it feels good to get that monkey off your team's back, doesn't it? Like, just to be like, listen, we're better than half of you guys. Fuck
no,
you guys.
All right, honestly, you guys really wanted me to... I wanted to be a fucking mess on this show, and you're ruining it. You want the honest truth.
Give me the truth.
I'm glad that we're where we're at. Two was the one that got us here. He won't be given the opportunity to see it through, which I think fucking sucks an enormous amount of ass. But it is what it is, and no matter what fucking happens, I'm going to be happy. Now, I'm going to circle back because I'm going to call your entire fan base a load of I wanted to talk about... Well, that's funny, eh? No,
that just made me laugh.
It's that fucking... I don't know who those... Sorry, circle the wagons. Fuck.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I got to address your fucking fan base, though. 20,000 followers on that shit. And I left the GIF here running so I'd stay mad over this shit. The one with the factory, through the factory.
Oh, no, is not through the factory. It's where they're carrying Spider-Man through the train.
Is it objectively funny? Yes, but in context... I fucking have nothing but poison for these motherfuckers. Like
now, folks, for those of you listening who can't see what he or don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, they fucking
there's a podcast out there that tweeted out a picture. It's a GIF of the moment from I believe it's Spider-Man 2. I don't know, but it's where Spider-Man is being carried down the train. Unconscious.
That's from a movie?
Yeah, it's Spider-Man and they're carrying.
I thought it was a video of some factory workers having fun.
No, it's them passing him unconscious back through the train because his mask came off. And so they basically tweeted out, they're like, oh, it's the Miami Dolphins sending Tua out there to start this game. It's important.
Well, like I say, it's an objectively funny video, but the context of this shit.
Well,
and
yeah.
The fact that that account has 20,000 followers and like almost exclusively the replies or the quote tweets or whatever are laughing and some Tua injury memes and like seriously, fuck. I honestly, I'm not gonna fucking tolerate that type of shit from no Bills fan, no nobody.
No,
you know, and as decent people, I just have to tell you and maybe some of your listeners, you're in the absolute minority in your fucking trash can fan base.
And I will say I understand your vitriol because
not that the Dolphins fan base is any good because nobody made such a claim.
I'll say this. I'm not going to defend that. In fact, what I'll say
seriously,
is...
Seriously, though, Happy DeMar's okay, though.
Well, exactly. But this is the thing. I just watched a guy almost die in a football field. We've talked about it openly. It has fundamentally changed the way that I look at some of this stuff. Because I know some of these guys. I have their phone numbers. I talk to some of them. And so to know that that's like a thing that they now have to think about and they have to walk around with... And you think to yourself, like the perfect example, the Bengals right tackle twists his ankle And he gets hurt in this football game that realistically shouldn't have had to be played by the Bengals. Like, they shouldn't have been playing their starters in the second half of that game. But the way the NFL chose to handle this whole situation, it forced it. And my first thought, now years ago, you could go back years. Chris, how many horrible things have I said about play? I remember talking about Tom Brady and going, I hope his next vacation he steps on a heroin needle in the beach and develops an addiction and can't play football anymore. I said that. That's a real thing that came out of my mouth one time. I now see this through a whole different lens because it's been made real, right? You realize these are people. And I always kind of knew that, but it drives it home that these are dudes with lives and families and shit. So then what happens is everyone here in the Bills fan base has this moment, and then it's gone. And like, I see that ankle injury and I get literally, I'm like, oh my God, I hope that guy's all right. Like, he's limping. Yeah,
a lot of your friends over there.
And for a lot of people,
they got short ass fucking memories.
And that's it. It wore off very quickly. And it was really disappointing to me to see that. Like, it really was.
But, you know, it's regardless, literally, I fucking hate the Buffalo Bills. I hope everything bad happens to you. Seriously. But in that specific instance and for the entire week until it was clear that he was going to be okay, which, by the way, is fucking unreal. I've never once felt like if the Bills went on to win the Super Bowl that any part of me wouldn't mind. But if I can imagine DeMar putting on a ring, I don't give a fuck if it happens for you guys this year. Honestly, do not give a fuck.
I love that, dude. Thank you. See, thank you.
That being said,
here we go.
The Dolphins' chances are astronomically low here, but biggest pressure game Bills have ever played, because if it's even remotely close, your whole franchise is a fucking fraud forever. I'm talking about remotely fucking close.
I love that. Right? I respect your opinion on it. And before we let you go, I just want to regale our listeners with this. If you ever doubt this guy's passion for his team, he made a bet. Not even a bet. He made threats. He made threats.
It was like a bargain.
It was basically like, listen, I'm going to bargain with fate that if this thing happens and they somehow, amidst this five-game skid, make the playoffs, it's peens out for the playoffs. And he uploaded a picture, an inappropriate picture of himself, as a joke.
Highly appropriate.
As a joke. And how many people downloaded that?
It wasn't a joke. You guys obviously didn't download the picture. It was a literal picture of my. It was not a joke. It was not a Rick Roll.
But that's my point. And I knew it was gonna be.
I literally took a fucking picture of my and put it on the internet because I give that little of a fuck.
And this is what I love is that when you did it, I was like I saw your tweet and I go, this guy is a maniac. I love him, but he's a maniac. And then you came back later that day.
You guys don't want to see my DMs this week.
And they, oh, I'm sure. And then you were like 130 people. You're like, who are these 130 people?
Baby, it's up to 160 now.
You're
That's not like tweet interactions. That's fucking.
That's people who click the link. They click.
Link, click, download.
And you made no bones about what it was. And these people clicked. I do like that the person, my favorite's the person who responded to you with the Photoshop from Arrested Development. And it's just, what's his face? Jason Bateman looking into a paper bag. That says it. It looks in, looks up, and goes, I don't know what I expected. It's like, yeah, exactly. He told you what it was. You're honest to a fault.
Look, I put that shit behind like four clicks, multiple warnings. I said, listen, this is not a joke. I've had to make it 100% optional because like half of my followers are women and I didn't want them to like with against their will see my. I mean, most of them probably looked anyway, or at least 160 of them. But I gotta leave it on this. I got to make you fucking mad because that was my intent from the beginning. How dare you invite me on a show and let me have a good time? Pricks. I'll hit you in the face with this indisputable fact. At full strength, Miami Dolphins are literally a better football team than the Buffalo Bills. Tested and confirmed. And you barely beat our second and third strings in the snow a few weeks ago. I mean, this might, if this is a game, you guys just end your whole show and team forever.
Joey,
sky's
we love
the
you.
Limit. Sky's the limit, motherfuckers. Don't choke.
We love you, Joey. Thanks for joining us
tonight.
Don't
choke. I love you too. Suck a butt, nerds.
Scott Mason, Christian Simonelli, Joey, or Vero Telfino. I am sure what people just listened to was they. I'm sure people just went, "What the fuck was that?"
First of all, inviting him on the show was a curveball. It was a curveball I wanted to throw everybody because I want them to like. I guess I just. First of all, his like, tell me that wasn't genuine emotion when he was watching that kick.
Yeah.
He was pleading. He was bargaining. He's like, I swear to God. How many times have you been hugging a toilet? And you're like, I swear to God, if you just stop this, I'll never drink again. Please, God, help me. Here he was bargaining with the football gods, going, I swear to God, I'll never make fun of Jason Sanders ever again. Not only will he, but he was one of his biggest detractors. And so it was just nice to hear that come out. And confront him with that and make him. It's like, hey, remember the time you got soft? Remember the time you cried?
Yeah.
See, now me, I'm in touch with my emotions. I'm okay with that.
Oh, I'll cry in front of Jessica at the drop of a hat.
Will you? Oh, don't tell me that. That makes you even. Oh, God.
That is.
See, I liked thinking that you were just this automaton. Now that I know that it's just an act and that the, like.
No, Jessica can bring me to tears at the drop of a hat.
Well, of course she can. She's a, you know what
she's
it is?
She's a saint.
She's a saint, but I'll tell you what. She's smarter than you.
Yeah, we know.
And better looking than you.
Yes, we know.
And just better than you in most ways.
We know that.
So, it makes sense that she can break you down a little bit.
Oh, yeah. It's we've had it before, so.
Mm. So, Chris, do you have a wrestling, what do you want to call it, an analogy? Because mine was the oddities. Because literally you throw Joey into that group of people, and it becomes just a freak show that you're like, what did I just see? This guy seems normal. That guy seems super talkative. What the fuck is that? Is that a guy with three heads?
I don't know. How about the Dangerous Alliance?
The Dangerous Alliance, yeah. Because if they ever rose up against us, I don't think we could stop.
Yeah, I wonder if Joey's got a different side to him, how like Nate Geary coined you an Andrew. So I wonder if there's a Joseph in there.
Oh, there's a Joseph?
Yeah.
Here's what I love, is that for anyone listening to this, what you just heard was a heavily redacted and edited version of what we recorded. But Joey over at his Fourth and Inches podcast...
Yeah, he recorded the whole...
He recorded it without telling us, and he's going to release it on his own platform completely unedited.
Yeah, so if you want the full unedited conversation...
If you
want to
hear a disaster of a conversation go off, just go over there. He's calling it Inchception. He's like, it's a podcast within a podcast that you didn't know was a podcast.
Yeah.
This is why I love this idiot. I fucking love this guy. And you can all scoff at me. I don't care. The Bills beat the Patriots 35-23. Obviously, if you're listening to this now, you've already heard our preview show. You've already heard our recap show. I'll say this. I said something earlier tonight, Chris. I'll keep it short and sweet. Because we don't have much to cover, right?
No, we're in the playoffs, and they're not.
I'm a little disappointed. And Vero did, Joey, Vero, whoever he wants to call himself this week, he hit the nail on something. I'm a little disappointed. And I mean, I shouldn't be because I know people are garbage. Right? Like, by and large, like, this DeMar Hamlin situation, I walked away from it going, I think that this has improved the way that I see other human beings. Just in terms of our ability to accept, like, to be humans to each other. And, I don't know, then I turn around and I watch. It's like, okay, well, DeMar's doing well. He's getting better. He's live tweeting games and things. And all of a sudden, it's fun to poke fun at players' injuries again. And it's fun to talk about, like, to his point, a certain GIF that was trafficked around in a tweet about how, like, oh, look at this. It's them trotting out an unconscious guy to go play quarterback. Chris, I don't find that funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess that this thing, and I'm a little disappointed because to me personally, this has changed the way I watch football. It's changed the way I feel about it. It's changed my approach, I guess, in terms of how I see, because like we've talked about it. I already see athletes as human beings. I don't see them as deities. I don't see them as someone to be put on a pedestal. They're just dudes. And I guess the other side of that thing, the other shoe that had to fall was that they're dudes. You know, I used to say like, oh, they're just dudes who have a cooler job than me. There are also dudes who put their physical well-being on the line for something I do as a hobby. Something that I watch to fill up the dead space in my weekend. Well, that's not true. It's something that I do and that I watch and I subscribe to because it gives me something to, like, Chris, football is ingrained in my life.
Yeah.
It's a part of, like, they talk about don't make your hobbies your personality. I can't. It's like when you look at Iman, grilling and barbecue is just a part of who Iman is. Correct or incorrect?
It is who he is.
Like, it's not all he is. Like, Iman, if you ever want to get down to it, he's a lot like Shrek in that they're both onions. There's a lot of layers. You just peel it back.
Yeah.
He's also a GNR fanatic. He's also been on TV. He's been at the center reality.
I don't know if I've ever asked him his opinion on Velvet Revolver.
See, exactly. Like, he's a music aficionado.
Because I love VR in high school. That was my jam.
You look like a Velvet Revolver fan. I bet you had one of those short sleeve t-shirts, didn't you?
No.
But Iman is incredibly interesting. He's got so many layers, and it's the same way. Like, I don't know. I guess I just, like, your hobbies shouldn't define you, but sometimes they do. And this is one of them. And so to me, I look at this and I go, I'm disappointed that so many people have just reverted directly back to being, I don't want to say bad sports, but I don't know, unsympathetic, I guess, is how I would choose to frame it. And again, I'm not mad at you. It's human nature. We talked about that. We talked about the shame. We talked about the disappointment, the stuff that comes along with being a football fan in the face of something as catastrophic as what just happened to the Buffalo Bills. I just know that I personally can't get myself there. It has fundamentally changed the way that I watch the game of football. And with that in mind, I just don't appreciate. I don't appreciate a lot of what's being said out there. And you got to hear firsthand from Joey how it's received when you're on the other side of that and how hypocritical it looks when it comes across that way from people who just experienced what we did. I don't know. But Chris, realistically, who am I to get on a pedestal or a high horse with anybody else? I'm garbage.
You are very much garbage.
There is no moral high ground I can take without being a hypocrite. So with that said, I'll just leave you with this. Don't let this. We talked with Tyler Dunn this past week about how maybe this is the moment where there can be a groundswell where people care more about the athletes than they do about the logos on the side of their helmets and start really pay attention to who these people are as human beings rather than just, hey, that's the guy who gets paid to catch the ball for the thing that I like watching. Obviously, it's a long road to get there. But I think as long as guys like us just hang on to that, don't let it go, and bring it up every now and again. I'm not going to be heavy-handed about it, but just remind people, hey, the guy's a human being. He has a wife. He has a kid. You know, earlier I was talking about the Alex Kappa ankle injury. Is that advantageous for anybody who's going to play the Cincinnati Bengals if their best offensive lineman can't play? Of course. Does that guy also have a wife and a kid and a future? tied to whatever knee and ankle injuries he might have sustained? Yeah. Like, that's also the other reality. And if you can't keep them both in balance, then I just question your humanity. But it's not for me to judge you. It's not for me to tell you who to be. Chris, I'm a terrible person.
Yes.
I just pick and choose my spots. This just happens to not be one of them. Guys, you enjoy this game any way you want. I just ask that you be good to each other. Be good to these guys who are risking their physical, long-term physical well-being to keep us all entertained every single Sunday. I don't know. That's it. I'm going to get off my soapbox now. We're going to close this out. I'm Drew Gear. That's Chris Krueger. And this has been your AFC's Roundup.